good afternoon if you're on the West Coast, and good evening if you're on the East Coast. This is John St. Germain. Welcome to Crystal Silence League Hour, brought to you by LMC Radio Network. And, of course, those beings who float about in the sacred ether plane. This is the second discussion of mediumship. I'm glad you've arrived. And those of you both on this side of the veil and those who have passed on to the other side. Tonight's discussion, I hope you stick around for. We're going to talk about a variety of things. We're going to continue our discussion of mediumship, communicating with spirits. We're going to discuss tools of spiritual communication, protection, setting up spiritual watch guards so that uninvited guests won't interrupt your discussions with your spirits. We're going to talk briefly about animal spirits and some other topics that may occur to me along the way. We're also going to discuss the idea that we discussed earlier about beings waiting to be born. In other words, as usual, we're just going all over the place. So grab your crystal balls and other tools. Grab a nice frosty drink of your choice, or a warm drink, a cleansing herbal drink if you like, and join us in just a few minutes. We'll be right back. Broadcasting from Chateau Saint Germain, and I'm sitting here in my silk dinner jacket, sipping a cognac by the roaring fire. As far as you know, that's true. I'm not sitting here in my underwear, scratching and drinking long neck Budweiser. Radio is an illusion. You know, you can do anything you want on radio. Isn't that nice? Of course, this is Crystal Silence League, and for those of you who don't know, the Crystal Silence League was founded around 1917 by Claude Alexander Conlon with the purpose of broadcasting and sending out positive prayer and affirmation for those in need. And in those days, it was done through postcard. People would send in by postcard, and Claude Conlon would put his crystal ball on the postcards and pray over them. And every morning he would go out with his crystal ball at dawn, three times a day, by the way, at dawn, midday, and at night. And since he was a powerful adept, he would project through the crystal ball through anybody who wished this, and everyone would who was a member of the Crystal Silence League also had a crystal ball, and they would go out and receive that which he sent, this powerful affirmation. A few years ago, a group of magical adepts from a Missionary Independent Spiritual Church reformed it on the internet, and you can go to CrystalSilenceLeague.org and post prayers, and prayer is always free. You can also join the Crystal Silence League, and if you buy a crystal ball or crystal, you get a copy of one of Mr. Conlon's books, Crystal Gazing, Lessons and Instructions in Silent Influence, for personal lessons, codes, and instructions for members of the Crystal Silence League, both excellent books, and also subscribe to our newsletter, which is also free. We have over, we have almost 7,000 subscribers to that newsletter, which, by the way, I edit. And I'm also working on a book about the Crystal Silence League and further lessons and instructions in the four branches of using a crystal ball and crystals for projection, attraction, healing, and mediumship. So what I do, it's the custom to start off the show with some prayer for people who post prayers. I print a bunch of them out, and I read them, and as always, these are anonymous. I refer to them only by prayer ID and by initials. And if you will, just please join me as we do this, and then we'll go on to our Stone of the Week, and then our discussion of mediumship and related topics as they come in my notes and whatever tangent it goes. And it doesn't take much. I walk a tightrope here. I really do, an intellectual tightrope, and it doesn't really take much to blow me off that into whatever whatever realm and adventure that happens in my mind. So people in the chat room bring up things, and as I look at it here, I go, yay, hey, there's something we can talk about. And who knows what weird holographic realm in my mind as the random neurons fire and take me off into some strange thing from the 60s and 70s. So, you know, who knows there. So please join us in prayer for the following people. Please, 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 spirits and angels and ministers of grace, hear the following. Prayer ID number 35518 TS, praying for a newfound bond. She returns to us from 2 years. Apparently her she was saved by our prayer, and she gives thanks to us all and begs that GW notices her more and tells her that he loves her as much as she loves him. So please bring these two lovers together. Prayer ID number 35516 DW. Please help DW with his finances. Needs a package arrived to pay bills. So he thanks very much and made this happen. Prayer ID number 35515 HP. Needs for TB to continue to be paid better and better, and that the promises that are made for financial affluence do come true. Prayer ID number 35514 KR. Prays for her father. Please pray for her father to get better, become more healthy, and recover from the triple heart bypass surgery. Prayer ID number 35513 KS. Needs uplifting prayer to lift her out of the negative space that she is in right now and to be brought into a better place. Prayer ID number 35512, again another KS, prayers for herself and her kids. They're homeless. And please, please pray for her and her four kids. She's looking for places to stay, and she's staying in the hotels right now and trying to make ends meet, and she's trying to find a permanent home for herself and her four children. Please pray for her to find one soon. Prayer ID number 35511, Nicole, I'm sorry, NN, prayer for a lost loved one. She's apparently a friend, JN, lost his mother, and please pray for comfort for him and his family. Prayer ID number 35510, SK, needs a protection from an evil person, and she prays the protection from E, who has the evil eye, who's done the evil eye on her and other people, and prays for a reversal, that his evil eye go back upon him. Prayer ID number 35509 TL, prays for easy money coming his way so he can pay for bills that need to be paid. Prayer ID number 35508, again a TL, needs a new work position, and relief from a mean boss, apparently. Prayer ID number 35507 WL, needs reimbursement from insurance. Prayer ID number 35506 BV, needs healing in a relationship, that her loved one becomes sweeter and more romantic. Prayer ID number 35505 SD, needs money to move into an apartment. and needs also money to remove bad luck from her and her finances. Prayer ID number 35504, CD, prays for protection from harm and danger. Prayer ID number 35503, SG, needs prayer for a court case. Prayer for Jay's court case will be good and that the Lord's justice will prevail. Prayer ID number 35502, MP, needs prayer. The proposed changes to the job will... no changes take place, that the job will stay just as it is, and that the retirement packages will remain the same. Prayer ID number 35501, JL, needs removal of curses from Tyler. Prayer ID number 35500, JL, also needs removal of curses from M. May all cross conditions be removed. Prayer ID number 35496, CAJ, prays for reconciliation. Needs reconciliation with her relationship with JFC. She prays that all the anger, bitterness, worries, and fears be removed between them. Prayer ID number 35495, KR. This is a court case and family finances. She prays that the trial end in her favor and prays for a mighty victory. Prayer ID number 35494, NM, prays for the ability to love herself and to stop hating herself. And she prays that she's no longer sad. May her heart be filled with love and with joy. Prayer ID number 35493, CB, needs a job. Needs to find a job. And the last months have drained her, and she needs blessings and prayer. She needs a miracle, and she's praying for one. And may she receive one. We have prayer number 35490, needs a removal of curse from her. Evil people have put the evil eye on her, and she needs help with her legal case as well. Prayer ID number 35488, LM, prays that her honey jar works. She's not getting any movement in her honey jar spell. Actually, next week we're going to be talking about honey jars and ways to energize and invigorate them, so I hope that she tunes in. May her honey jar be active, and may it attract the love that she wants in her life. Prayer ID number 35487, SE, needs healing. She's suffering with fears and depressions, and may she be healed. Prayer ID number 35486, GR, needs help with her court case and the return of her daughter. And lastly, and finally, prayer ID number 35485, HS, needs prayer. Applied for graduate school and has been placed on a wait list and prays that he will be admitted. May all these prayers come true. May these people be blessed and may grace be upon them. And may their prayers be answered. Amen. Gosh, I'm so glad to see everybody. We have a full chat room tonight of interesting characters, and so it should be very good. If anybody wants to call in tonight, our number, of course, is 657-383-0526. Press 1. I'll pick up on you if you have stories about spiritual contact. I want to start with a story myself. The first time I saw a dead person, and I don't mean laying in a coffin, you know, with flowers and canned tape-recorded church music playing. I mean a spirit. And I had to be very young. I was probably... somewhere between 3 and 4 years old, no older than 4. And I remember I was laying in bed, and I couldn't sleep because I had a stomach ache. And my grandfather came in, and he sat on the side of the bed, and he rubbed my stomach, and he sang to me, which was something that he would do. And I fell asleep. And the next morning, I woke up, and I ran into the kitchen, and I was eating breakfast. And I remember what I was eating. It was oatmeal. And my mother was a terrible cook. You know, may she rest in peace. She was a terrible cook, and her oatmeal was always burned on the bottom. It was crunchy. This oatmeal was crunchy. And I was eating her oatmeal, and I told her about it. I said, you know, Papaw, that's what we call him in the South, for those of you up north. I said, you know, Papaw came in and last night, and he sang to me and rubbed my tummy, and it felt better. And my aunt was there, and my mom and my aunt, they exchanged a look, and she said, well, you must have dreamed that, Johnny, because that couldn't have happened. And I said, oh, no, yeah, it happened. I'm eating my crunchy oatmeal. And she said, no, your papa died last night. And, you know, we didn't want to tell you because we didn't want you to be upset. And I said, what does that mean? I had no idea what that meant. And she said, well, remember your hamster Pinky? Do you remember how he died? And we put him in a shoebox and had a funeral and buried him in the backyard. I said, well, that's what happened to your grandfather. You know, we're going to have a funeral for him, and we don't want you to be upset or scared. And I said, oh, so they put my grandfather in a shoebox, and did he come out of the shoebox and come visit me? I didn't really understand what was going on. But at the funeral, I got the idea. And that was the first time I was introduced to the idea that there was a part of us, a consciousness, some part of us that survived the death of the body. When the body stopped working, that something continued, and that the body was not important, that it was a receptacle, that it was a mechanism. Later on, I got the idea, but even to this day, I can't tell you what spirit is. I can't tell you what consciousness is. Science does not know what consciousness is. We know that we can measure where consciousness occurs when people think certain things, parts of the brain light up. But I think it's naive and foolish to think that because a process occurs that is the cause of the process, because when consciousness and thought occurs, parts of the brain light up, that is the source of the consciousness. It's putting the cart before the horse, in my opinion. It's saying that because these things happen, that's the source of it. This is reasoning backward. This is reasoning from a conclusion. This is saying that it's a material source. It's mistaking cause and effect. It's saying that because the brain lights up when people experience consciousness, then the brain must be responsible for consciousness. And to me, this is naive. It's a naive assumption. It's a naive assumption, and it's naive to me to assume that with the breakdown of the body, that consciousness, that awareness, the sense of awareness, and that's what in Buddhism, awareness, is consciousness, awareness, is what it means, ends. In Buddhism, consciousness is defined as a process that occurs moment by moment in very tiny increments. It's called citta, and it's in very tiny increments, and it goes bam, 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 like this. It's a process, and that process does not begin at birth, and it doesn't end at death. And in meditation, you can experience this process of how one moment of consciousness conditions the other, kind of like dominoes falling, bam, 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 bam. And in Buddhism, it is believed that the death consciousness of one being sparks the birth consciousness of another. And last week, we were introduced to the idea of the Gandhaba, the being waiting to be born. And we did that right at the very beginning, and we have some comments, and we have our friend Nagasiva, who points out that consciousness is awareness of awareness and appears to surround complex nervous systems. Yes, and then in Buddhism we talked about the Gandhaba, which is the one of the prerequisites necessary for sentient beings, and we just got at the very beginning of that. And before we ended it, I wanted to discuss that a little bit more. In Buddhism, I looked up the discussion of that, and in the Pali Canon, which is immense, it's the, if you could call it that, the Buddhist Bible, which takes up 7 feet of shelf space, and I'm looking right at mine, there is a sutta. A sutta is a discussion. It'd be like a chapter. Called the Mahatanha Sankhya Sutta. And Maha means great, grand, or expansive. Tanha means thirst or desire. Sankhya means exposition or knowledge. So you've got the great exposition on desire. And this is immense, and I'm going to devote an entire episode to this because this basically peels apart the very nature of experience. There's a question here. Sutta is Pali and Sutra is Mahayana. So you have Pali and Sanskrit, basically. Sutta is the Pali in the Pali canon, which is used by Theravadan Buddhists, and the Mahayana Buddhists have sutras. And then you have Shastras, which is the Chinese Vahayara Shastras. So these are basically verses or chapters. That's why in my school, Theravada, we talk about Nibbana, and the Mahayana talk about Nirvana. And we talk about karma, and Mahayana call it karma. The Mahayana have done more public relations about Buddhism than we have, with the Dalai Lama and that. A lot of people think the Dalai Lama is the Buddhist Pope, but my school of Buddhism, we don't recognize him. The Theravada do not recognize the idea of tulkus and things like that. It's not recognized by my school. So we like the Dalai Lama, but we don't recognize the process that occurs there. but that's another topic and another forum and all that. But this idea of consciousness, Mahatana Sankhara Sutta, it peels apart the nature of existence, the very nature of existence and experience, like an onion. It breaks it down, and I would love to go through this. It's the topic of another show, but in one part he talks about the birth and growth of a being. And that's what I'm going to read to you now. And the Buddha's talking to his monks, and he says, "Monks, the descent of the embryo occurs with the union of three things. There is the case where there is no union of the mother and father. The mother is not in her season. That means she's ovulating. And a Gandhaba is not present. And the Gandhaba is the consciousness from a previous being, the being waiting to be born." That's what the word means, being waiting to be born. "Nor is there a descent of an embryo. There is the case where there is a union of the mother and father, and the mother is in her season, but a Gandhaba is not present, nor is there a descent of an embryo. But when there is a union of the mother and father, the mother is in her season, and a Gandhaba is present. Then with this union of three things, the descent of the embryo occurs." Then he goes on to say this, "Then for 9 or 10 months, the mother shelters the embryo in her womb with great anxiety as a heavy burden. Then at the end of 9 or 10 months, she gives birth with great anxiety as a heavy burden. Then when the child is born, she feeds it with her own blood, for mother's milk is called blood in the discipline of the noble ones. Then as the child grows and his faculties mature, he plays at children's games, toy plow, stick games, somersaults, toy windmills, toy measures, toy carts, and a toy bow and arrow. As he grows and his faculties mature still further, he enjoys himself, provided and endowed with the 5 strings of sensuality, forms cognizable via the eye, agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, enticing, accompanied with sensual desire. Sounds cognizable via the ear, aromas cognizable via the nose, flavors cognizable via the tongue, tactile sensations cognizable via the body, agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, enticing, accompanied with sensual desire." Then he goes on and on about why all this occurs. And again, I'd like to go into this in great detail at some point because it's the very nature of human existence, and I believe that Buddhism and New Thought go right hand in hand because this whole idea of experiencing internal states, manifesting as external reality, that really started with Buddha. But here we have this idea of existing before birth and existing forever. And in Buddhism, it's believed that consciousness is a fundamental attribute of the universe, like matter, gravity, and things like that. So consciousness exists. So how do you reconcile this idea of rebirth with spirits? That's been asked me a long time. They said, "John, you're a Buddhist. You know, got this rebirth thing going. How do you reconcile that with the idea of spirits and consciousness?" And well, that was a belief, and Buddha addresses that. There were spiritual beings, identities that visited Buddha and said, "Can you help us out, man?" There were many realms in Buddhism. There were realms of existence. People would die and be spirits. Hungry ghosts, divas, all sorts of means of existences, and it depends on where you are. The spirits were believed to be composed of a subtle matter. That's the very term, subtle matter. They weren't entirely phantasmic. They were made of subtle matter, and in some of the schools of spiritualism, you know, you hear about ectoplasm and things like this, which is a very, very similar to the ideas of subtle matter. And some of these spirits could manifest as the subtle matter could solidify. And you find discussions of this all through Buddhist literature, how spirits would solidify and make their presence known to enlightened beings. And so it's really not incompatible. It's only incompatible if you get very rigid in your thinking and have to be a certain way. So here we have this idea of beings waiting to be born. And apparently these beings are able to, some beings who are advanced in their development can pick and choose their parents. Now, most people cannot. You know, Buddha talks about how most people, they're called worldlings, are so driven by desire that consciousness, once the body dies, is so hungry for experience that it just clings to the first thing it can. It's so hungry for, thirsts for experience, the sense. Without the body, you can't sense. You don't have eyes, you don't have ears, you don't have touch, you don't have taste. And consciousness freed from the body, the undisciplined conscience, and he goes on to see that. He talks about being infatuated with, you know, pleasure. That once the body dies, consciousness let free is nothing but hunger, nothing but desire, nothing but tanha. So, bam. So you go bang, and this desire will just cling to the first thing. And that's why there's sometimes very unfortunate rebirth, because the last thought of your death, the last moment of consciousness, is considered the sole determination of the nature of your rebirth. And that's why it's very important in Buddhism to have a refined consciousness. And then we go back to new thought, refining your intent. You see how everything that I kind of ramble about comes full circle. I like to think there's a subtle perfection to my every word. I like to think that. It may not be true, but I like to think it. So it's important, you see, to have a refined intent if you're going to talk to spirits. Because if you're sending out requests and summonings to spirits, you want to make sure that what you're asking for is very clear. We talked about ancestor work last time. I got to tell you, there's some of my ancestors I really wouldn't want to have hanging around my altar, hanging around my my house. I just really wouldn't. And people in death are very much like they are in life. There's not this sudden enlightening moment at death. If you were a jerk in life, you're probably going to be a jerk in death. You know, I hate to disillusion some of these New Age people that think death is some enlightening experience, but no kidding, if you're a jerk in life, you're going to be a jerk in death usually. And I mean, why does death all of a sudden, oh, hey, I'm enlightened? No. So you ought to be very careful what you send out. And we talked about this in projection. You know, people, we had someone call in and say, you know, I'm really afraid of summoning demonic forces. Well, you know, once again, it's very difficult to summon demonic forces, but you can summon, you know, call out people or spirits that are trickster spirits and hostile spirits and things like that. So it's very important to be very disciplined in your thinking. And if you're not, set up watch guards. Protection. So let's talk about protection. Let's talk about protection for a little while. And we'll talk about protection for a little bit, and then we'll talk about Stone of the Week, and then we'll talk about tools and tools of psychic divination. There are many ways to protect yourself from spiritual attack, and I had a bunch of them written down here, and where the heck are they? I'll just tell you off the top of my head. Your ancestors can protect you. If you have a very strong ancestor on your side, your ancestors can be your best defense, period. They're very, very protective of you in many ways. If you have ancestors on your side. They can protect you against spiritual assault of all kinds, of all sorts. So that's one of your first line of defenses. But, of course, if you're first starting out working with spirits, you don't have ancestors. There are there's prayer you can use. You can use sacred salt to make sacred salt. It's very easy. You get kosher salt. You mix it with hyssop. You can mix it with other blessed herbs. You pray over it, and you bless it. And I like to do this every day for 5 days. I like to really charge that blessed salt. And you put it in a circle around your working area. Now, there are certain incenses you use when you work with spirits that are very good. Sandalwood is very attractive to most spirits. Frankincense attracts the higher spirits, you know, the high-class spirits, the ones that live out in the suburbs, and it discourages trickster spirits. I'm told dragon's blood discourages most spirits, so that's, you know, if you have a place that's, you know, haunted or with a negative spirit, you use dragon's blood to cleanse it of, you know, all spirit. You make it a spiritual vacuum, basically. Benzoin and myrrh, use it with care. You gotta know what you're doing. You need to be taught how to use benzoin and myrrh when you work with spirits. But frankincense is very good to discourage trickster spirits, and it's good to clean your tools of spiritual divination. I'll tell you that the Archangel Raphael, you can call upon, works with the dead for protection, but if you're going to work with archangels, there are four archangels specifically that you can call upon and work with to seal your entire room, to seal all four quarters. Uriel, Gabriel, Raphael, and Michael to seal the corners. Uriel is the elemental of earth. Gabriel is water. Raphael is air. Michael is fire. So have an altar, part of your altar dedicated to these four archangels, and beseech them. And I have done this many times. This is one of my favorite ways to seal your working area. I beseech you, Uriel, cardinal angel of the northern corner, protect the northern corner from any invasion of negative or hostile energies. I beseech you, Gabriel, cardinal angel of the western corner. I beseech you with a humble heart, please protect the western corner from any invasion of negative or hostile energies. I beseech you, Raphael, cardinal angel of the eastern corner, please seal the eastern corner from eastern direction from invasion from negative or hostile energies. And Michael, I beseech you, Archangel Michael, cardinal angel of the southern corner, seal the southernmost direction from any invasion of any negative or hostile elementals or energies that may try to invade this room. Please, oh, archangels, hear my prayer. Protect us from any negative or hostile energies that may enter this room. So mote it be. Amen. And these archangels, you work with these archangels, and that's the most powerful elemental force that you can use to protect you from negative or hostile energies. And learn to work with angels and archangels and learn to beseech them and, you know, call down their forces, and this is a very good protection. My ancestral spirits I work with, my great grandmother, mean old mountain woman. You don't want to mess with her. She keeps the place clean. So this is a way to just some of the watch guards. There are protective stones and amulets. Black tourmaline is a favorite for ceremonial magicians to keep the place clean. That's the research you can do. Work with the protective stones to learn which ones work well with you. But you should always have protective watch guards in place, especially when you're at the beginning, when you're working with spirits, because you don't know what you're going to send out there. Now, let's talk about the tools of divination. You can work without a net. You can just use your consciousness, but sometimes you need help. If you're not a natural medium, you might need help. You might need tools. And one of the tools that is classic is the famous Ouija board. I know people that won't touch a Ouija board. They're terrified of them. Oh, my God, it's a gateway. That's a gateway to hell. It really isn't. It's a tool. It's a board with letters drawn on it. And, of course, it was the one we know now was invented, 150 years ago by a guy named William Fuld, who was a cabinet maker. And many, many variations on it. And again, if you're just, you know, jerking around with it, there's no telling what you might summon. But it's a classic way to contact spirits. And again, you set up watch guards. You know very specifically what kind of spirits you're trying to talk to. It's basically a form of automatic writing. And and you know, cleanse the board. You can cleanse the board in frankincense, psychic energy, smoke. You know, smoke your board, cleanse your tools, and call for protection. Catherine said she had bad experiences with Ouija boards. I've heard of bad experiences with Ouija boards. I never have. I've always had very good experiences. I can do some stuff with a Ouija board that will freak your mind. I can have you think of the name of someone close to you, and I can spell it out on a Ouija board about 90% of the time with the aid of you know, spiritual assistance. I can do it blindfolded. Yes, I can do it blindfolded. You know, people say, well, you want to see you have a Ouija board? Because, you know, sometimes when you're doing a Ouija board, you deceive yourself. You're pushing it yourself. And I was doing this with some friends, and somebody says, well, do it blindfolded. I said, oh, okay, come back and put your hands over my eyes. And I was doing it blindfolded, and this guy's like, oh, my God. So I can do some freaky things with a blindfold, with a Ouija board. Closely related to a Ouija board is automatic writing, and this is where you you make your mind empty. You know, you go into the silence, and you hold a writing instrument in your hand, and you start writing, and you channel, you funnel, you become a conduit for the spirits. Arthur Conan Doyle's wife, Lady Doyle, was an automatic writer, and she had an experience with the magician Harry Houdini. And Harry Houdini said it could not have been his mother because the spirit didn't speak Yiddish, which was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Obviously, the spirit communicated ideas, which were communicated by Lady Doyle, who did not speak Yiddish. That's just stupid. That's reasoning backward from a conclusion. And there's a book written by Conan Doyle on his experiences with spiritualism. And if you read Houdini's account of what happened and Conan Doyle's account of what happened, they're very different. They are very, very different. And if you know that Houdini was a spectacular liar, Houdini lied about a lot of things. Most of what Houdini said he did, he didn't. Like, you know, the escape from the iced over Detroit River, there was never any ice on that river. The escape from Scotland Yard, it never happened. A lot of the stuff Houdini said he never did. He lied about a lot of things. He never exposed the medium Marjorie. That whole expose was a complete fraud. He never exposed the spirit medium Marjorie. That never happened. You'll hear magicians talk about that forever. He never exposed her. I can prove to you that that was a fraud. He never did that. That's another story. Most of the spirit exposés that Houdini did, he would watch. He didn't. There are records from the Scientific American Spirit Investigating Committee where Houdini just disrupted it so badly they had to ask him to leave. And then he would go and say, "Yes, I exposed it." And he would, you know, do magic tricks to, like a Eusebia Palladino. She was never exposed by Houdini, or many of these. There's two sides of the story. And I have access. I've had access to people who knew Houdini, and you know, just anyway, magicians like to say, "Well, everything's a trick." Okay, you know, whatever, dude. So we have the Ouija board. We have the pendulum. The pendulum is a very good thing for yes and no, and you know, talking boards, spirit boards, and the pendulum is yes and no. And again, you have to be careful. You're not, you know, fooling yourself. And wishful thinking. That takes a lot of discipline. You know, does my boyfriend love me? Oh, look, yes. Now he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me, he loves me not. You'll be very careful. There's a very cool thing you can do, and this was shown to me by my aunt. You take a plate, and you write the alphabet around the rim of the plate, and you fill it with water. And there are two things you can do with this. You can put pepper on the surface of the water and hold your hand over it and concentrate, and the pepper will move around on the water and form clumps, and you can do divination on the clumps, like doing tea reading. But check this out. Put an arrow or a dot on the edge of a styrofoam cup and float it on the water. And then you and your friends just put your fingers around the rim of the plate and concentrate, and I guarantee you, if you wait, that styrofoam cup will float around the rim of that plate and the arrow will point to letters. Isn't that cool? You float the styrofoam cup opening down, so it's like a little boat, and you can put, you know, several arrows on it if you want to make it faster. Put four arrows on it, you know, from the four quadrants. And you and your friends have about four friends, point your fingers at the cup, don't touch it, and concentrate. And that cup will start to float around that water toward the rim of the cup, and it will spell stuff. Isn't that cool? And, you know, don't touch the cup. Just let the energy from your fingertips go out, and the cup will start to move around the plate, and it is so cool. It is just so cool, and it'll spell stuff out. Now, it might spell or something, but, you know, sometimes it'll spell messages, and that's very, very cool. Another tool of spiritual divination we talked about some time ago is the psychomantium. Dr. Raymond Moody, who wrote a book back in the 70s called Life After Life about near-death experiences, made quite a sensation with this. The psychomantium was used in ancient Greece, a room very dimly lit, candles, and a mirror, a black mirror, that's tilted at an angle where it doesn't reflect you. It can be an upward angle or a downward angle. And so it does not reflect you, and you sit in front of it, and you look in that mirror. It's important you don't see your reflection. The mirror has to reflect darkness. And you can have a flickering light, a red light, but the light's got to be dim, and you gaze into that mirror. And I've got to tell you, one of the scariest things I ever did was in high school when I read Raymond Moody's book, and this book was written in the 70s. And back in those days, we didn't have the internet back then. You had to find this stuff in bookstores and read it. It was back in the day, you had to go to the library and do research and buy books and read them, and you just can't find this stuff on the internet. You'd find these things in books and go, that's cool, I'm going to try that. So I got a picture frame, a pretty big one, and painted the back of it black and tilted it in a closet and shut the closet. It was absolutely dark, and I took a little pin light and put it behind the mirror, and I sat and watched, and son of a bitch, my grandmother walked out of that mirror. And, you know, I was doing that Abbott and Costello thing, you know, trying to back out of that mirror. And you will see things, and this is an excellent tool for many things. And Raymond Moody still lives, and he's in Alabama, and he has a psychomantium chamber. And you can rent a session with him, and he uses light hypnosis to put you in a trance state. And you go into the psychomantium chamber, and you can talk to deceased relatives, or you can have past life experiences with him and all sorts of stuff, which I think is very cool. He'll also sell you for $200 or $300 a psychomantium mirror that's autographed by no less than Dr. Raymond Moody. Limited editions numbered, and they're really nothing more than ornate mirrors that have been painted black on the back that you could probably buy for $50 somewhere and paint the backs yourself. But, you know, they're autographed by Raymond Moody in gold pen, which is kind of cool. So that's really good. But the psychomantium is a wonderful tool of spiritual divination, but be prepared to be have intense experiences. I found if you use a red light, you know, if you use a candle under a red box, a red glass box, plexiglass box, or a flashlight with a red filter over it, the experience is even more intense. Red light seances are in and of themselves outstanding in their experiences. What else? These are all very, very good tools of divination. What I would like to emphasize most of all, I think, is make sure your mind is very focused on this. You don't want to drift away into daydreaming. Meditation is going to help you. focusing your intent. Don't do this when you're tired, depressed. Don't be in a negative frame of mind. Always be confident. Be positive. Be alert. Do it for the right reasons. You know, don't do this so you can have power and control over other people. This usually ends badly. This will usually end badly. And let's take a little change of subject right now and talk about our stone of the week. And then we'll have a little break and then come back with some other little random bits of information that I'd like to throw at you. The stone of the week is a chrysoberyl, which is I'll tell you, it's an expensive stone, but a very pretty thing. And chrysoberyl will bring you wisdom. It's help you with enlightenment, realization. It can help get you out of a corner. If you're really puzzled in a corner, you overanalyze things. You're puzzled. You're locked up. You know, you're jammed up. You just have you're at the intersection of bafflement and bewilderment. Chrysoberyl can help you in your contemplations. It can help empower you if you're feeling unempowered, I guess, if you're feeling hopeless, helpless. It can help in money spells and prosperity spells, money and prosperity visualization. And a variation of chrysoberyl is alexandrite, which is very good for drawing luck and good fortune. And it's used in love spells quite a bit. I've used alexandrite in mojo bags if the people want to, want to pay for it, because chrysoberyl and alexandrite both are expensive crystals, but very beautiful. Alexandrite is especially lovely. It changes color depending on how you look at it. And I can tell you a story if you want to hear it. Since I was a young lad, I was entranced with the Pre-Raphaelite artists, especially Dante Rossetti. And if you look at his paintings, he always painted the same models. And if you look up, you can find the name. First, he painted his wife, who died of a chloral nitrate addiction. And then he painted his friend's wife, with whom he had an affair. But these were red-headed women with magical eyes. They were green eyes that could change color. Sometimes they were hazel, sometimes green, sometimes blue, sometimes gray. And I was fascinated with this type of woman with magic eyes. And my own artwork, I painted and drew this kind of woman. If you look on my Facebook page, I have some of my paintings of this particular type of woman, redheaded with magic eyes. And I've written poems about her, a woman with magic eyes that change color depending on the light and the surroundings. And gosh, I guess about 3 years ago, I started having clairvoyant dreams, intense clairvoyant dreams about this woman. And they were so intense. They were dreams that were like reality. I'd wake up from these dreams and wonder where I was. It was like as if I were transported from one reality to another. I would wake up confused and think, no, I want to go back. These weren't erotic dreams. They weren't, sexual dreams. They were just dreams where I was really happy. I was very, very content. It was unlike any other relationship I ever had. It wasn't based on passion all my other relationships were based on picking up a project and trying to fix it. You know, like how you get a junk car, or a fixer-upper house, and you try to make it better. That was what fueled my other relationships. The relationships in my dreams were not fueled at all. They were content. They were just content and happy. And I'd wake up from that contentment and happiness into the reality and go, no, I want to go back to that. And but the girl in my dreams are redheaded. She had those magic eyes that changed color. Sometimes they were green, and sometimes hazel, and sometimes blue, and sometimes kind of gray with a reddish tint. I yearned for that. And I said, you know, if I can't find that type of contentment in a relationship, at this point I was 52, I guess. I said, I'll just be alone. I don't care. I'll just, you know, live the life of a lay Buddhist, a layman who takes the Buddhist vows, you know, celibacy and et cetera. I said, I don't even want to try any of those other relationships where, you know, they're, you know, you live this kind of life of quiet misery and, you know, trying to fix somebody who's got a lot of problems and things and where you're, you know, you just dread to come home and stuff. I said, I want that contentment. I want that compatibility. And if I can't find it, I'll just be alone. I said, I want the girl with magic eyes. And do you believe that I met her? Would you believe it that I met her? And her name was very close to the name of the girl in my dreams. This was a truly prophetic and clairvoyant dream. And I told my friends about this. I told my friends. And I said, this is not a normal dream. This is a prophetic and clairvoyant dream. And, you know, I met her. And, you know, we've been together now more than 2.5 years, and it is just as I dreamed. It is contentment. It is contentment. And I cannot describe to you, unless you've experienced this type of contentment with another person, what it's like. But it's worth it. So you see, this sort of magic does occur if you get it in your mind. I was talking to a very wise friend of mine, and he said, what's happened is your mind is reprogramming itself. You've changed your filter, what you think relationships are. And this is what I tell my clients. I say, you know that what you're sending out now is need. You're projecting out there, who would want to be with me? You know, who would want to be with someone as messed up as me? And so you're projecting out this broken vibration, and the people you're attracting to you have that. You're not sending out. I said, turn that around. You should say, why wouldn't you want to be with someone as wonderful as me? You got to turn that around. I said, you got to turn that broken thought around. And that's why this whole thing, we have a new thought, a projection. You will attract what you send out. If you're sending out, you know, hey, I fix broken things. Hey, you know, come to me, I fix broken things. That's what you're going to attract. You're going to attract broken people. And if that's what you like to do, you know, more power to you. But I got to tell you, by the time you're 50, you get tired of that. You really get tired of that. And this is what I've also learned. You can fix broken cars, you can fix broken houses, but if you're in the business of fixing broken people, do it for a living. Don't do it in your personal life. Don't try to do it in your relationships. You can help people, but don't be a savior. There was one savior in history, and look what happened to him. Look how he ended up. And, you know, I've told people this, to go, yeah, but he rose from the dead. Yes, but he was Jesus, and there was only one Jesus. You know, you're not Jesus, and I'm not Jesus, so don't be a savior. Let God save the world. Let God save the world. You be content with helping people. Don't save them. Help them. And, he said, the Buddha, you know, Buddha didn't save people. He taught people how to save themselves. You know what Buddha's last words were? All conditioned things of experience are impermanent and subject to decay. Seek out your own salvation with diligence. Seek out your own salvation with diligence. Work out your own salvation with diligence. Yeah, work out your own salvation with diligence. I had that taped to my computer at one time. All conditioned things of existence are subject to impermanence and decay. Work out your own salvation with diligence. Yeah, Buddha did not save people. He showed people how to save themselves. In fact, there's a sutta where he talked about. He said if you can tame a horse, what do you do with it, monks? They said, well, you cherish that horse. You cherish that horse, you feed it, you groom it, because if you can't tame a horse, what do you do to that horse, monk? Then I said, well, master, you kill that horse. And he said, such and such a person that's unteachable, they're dead to me. I kill them. And, of course, what he meant, and that was much disputed in some circles that I went to, the Buddha said he killed people. I said, well, what he meant was they were dead to him spiritually. They were dead to him as a teacher. He didn't have time to waste on people that couldn't be taught. In other words, as I've been known to say sometimes, don't have time for stupid people. Buddha didn't have time for stupid people. He got salty sometimes. He'd call people fools and idiots sometimes. You know, he'd say, "When did I ever say that, thou fool, you foolish man? I never said that, you foolish man. Get out of here." Buddha didn't suffer idiots well. And it's kind of surprising to people that think Buddha was this kind of soft-spoken guy who butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. Buddha came from the Sakyan clan. He was a warrior. He came from a warrior clan. And he didn't have time for foolishness. If you wanted to learn how to work out salvation, how to become enlightened, he would teach you with all of his heart. But if you were there to waste his time, he'd not waste his time on it. And he taught everybody. He was against the caste system. He was the only teacher of his time that worked against the caste system. He was the first teacher to teach women. He set up an order for women. He was the first. And he was way ahead of his time in these areas. There's a wonderful, I believe, I might have it here. He also had a policy of not hiding anything. There's no esoteric policy in Buddhism. He explained it all. It's called in the Pali, Ihipasako, which means come and see. Nothing's accepted on faith. He said, "I'm not going to tell you anything that you accept on. Don't take it on faith." We discussed that once. He said, "Don't accept it because it's written in a book or because I tell you. See for yourself. All the teachings are subject to examination. See for yourself. Test it by your own experience. And if it's not compatible with your experience, set it aside for now." One of these. Some Brahmins came up, and they were arguing about the caste, and said, "Well, you know, sir, don't you believe the Brahmins are the highest caste, and everyone else is inferior?" And the Buddha said, "Do you know, good sir, how the descent of an embryo comes about?" And they said, "Well, yes, we know." It said, "The union of the mother, the father, and the mother's in season, and the Gandhava is present, so the embryo comes out." He goes, "Good sir, do you know whether for sure the Gandhava is a noble, or a Brahmin, or a merchant, or a worker?" And those were the four castes. And they say, "Well, Gudrun, we don't know for sure whether that Gandhava is a noble, or a Brahmin, or a merchant, or a worker." Now listen to what he said. "That being so, sirs, then what are you?" What are you? So what were you before you were born? Were you black or white, or Muslim or Christian? We're killing each other, and we don't even know what we are. We don't know what we were when we were a Gandhava being waiting to be born. We weren't black, white, Christian, Cherokee, Irish, Christian faith. We were yellow, black, Asian. We were none of that. We're killing each other. And what are you? What are you? And the Brahmins, these were young Brahmins. They were young, you know it-alls, you know, like you have today. You know, kids that get on the internet. And, you know, they've been into something for an hour and a half, and they're experts. That's what these kids were. "That being so, sir, we don't know what we are." And so Buddha said, "Sirs, the seven Brahmin sages," these were the sages that started Brahmanism, "questioned, studied together, and asked for reasons on their view about the purity of birth, could not explain. Here you, questioned by me, were studying together, and I, asking for reasons about the purity of birth, you could not explain." So why are we killing each other over the question we can't answer? Who are you? Who am I? It's an interesting question, isn't it? We cling so much to this idea of identity. I am this. I am that. I am this. I fight for this. I fight for this. And in the long run, who are we? We're a conglomeration of concepts and ideas and fog, like a soap bubble. It's like a soap bubble. It's like a foam on a river. That's a solid. Concepts, ideas, beliefs, attitudes, soap bubbles. Like a soap bubble, like a magician's illusion. Like the hollow bamboo, it looks solid. You look down, it's hollow. That's what we are. Why do we cling so much to it? Why are we killing each other for it? Why are we shooting each other in the streets? Why are we so angry? Why are we so mad about it? Consciousness is a soap bubble. Consciousness is a magician's illusion. Consciousness is like the foam core of a reed. Consciousness is a fog in the wind. just, you know, contemplate that. And we'll be back next week. We're going to talk about how to turn your honey jar into a meditation object and other neat things. Thanks so much for joining us. John St. Germain, Crystal Silence League Hour. Bye-bye.